So many ways to say I love you in different languages across the land. You haven't heard them all, so I'll tell you as only a true geek can.
Hello and welcome to Geekly Yoked, the world's best married Christian geek podcast.
Word.
As always, I'm Lehman Kessler.
And I'm Rachel Kessler.
That's Mother Rachel Kessler.
Woo.
And we're joined by a special awake guest today.
Ow, ow, ow.
She will probably make noises as we go about our business.
But that was the only way you're going to get a podcast this weekend.
Yeah, pretty much. It's like, let's do it when she's asleep. Yeah.
It's like, I always have, like, it's the thing everyone in the church always wants to ask about.
Oh, yes?
Know. Well, it's like, it's the polite question.
Ah, I see.
Right? It's like for how 6 months after you get married, everyone has to ask you how married life is going.
Oh, okay.
After you have a baby, it's always, how's the sleep going? And I'm just like, oh, you make the little joke.
Yeah. We are, you know what? We're getting by.
Are we? Are we?
We're sort of...
I sometimes wonder when I see you during the day, Lehman.
I'm alive.
Are you?
Because
I wonder.
I'm doing okay.
You sometimes look a little bit like The Walking Dead.
A show I have not started watching.
I know, neither have I.
But it is on Netflix, so like...
But we don't have time to watch anything.
It's very true.
This is a really bad, like, pop culture-y podcast now because we...
Can't participate in pop culture?
Yeah.
We participate!
Do just we? Do
very, we? In very limited means. We both started watching the Jim Henson's Creature Shop
that
challenge
is true.
Show.
That is very true.
That's a tevolution.
It's a tevolution. It's very true, yes.
This is a remarkable show. It's sort of, from what I can gather, it's based on sort of the model of like Face Off or I guess the Next Top Model. Or actually, the show it really reminds me of was a web series reality show, Strip Search, which was about trying to find web cartoonists.
Oh, okay.
But it's, for those who haven't seen it, it's on either sci-fi or space, depending on which country you're in.
I think my favorite thing about it is how hard they have to work to drum up, like, interpersonal drama on this show, because it's like... It really is a reality show full of competent professionals.
Well, like, it's
who
like...
Who seem like all kind of really cool people.
Well, it would essentially be like Battle of the Techies, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's, you know...
A battle of the people who are used to just getting stuff done.
Well, yeah, because... So the idea for this is they bring together a whole bunch of folks who work on creating Muppets, you know,
yeah.
animatronics, or giant, like, felt creatures or...
Yeah.
Things like that. I mean, they come from very different backgrounds. Some, again, are in animatronics. Some are just, like, in amazing
one,
kind of...
One girl is just a theater techie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, like, movie props and things like that. And each episode, they're given a task, and they have to create some kind of puppet to be judged by Brian Henson and company. One of the things I liked least about this show is that they only have three judges. One of whom is one of the hosts, and yet right before the judging, they like take precious time to tell you who the judges
They're
are.
They're probably contractually obligated to do that.
Probably, but it's like, yeah, we know. And then the contestants are like, oh, hello. It's like you just met these guys last week. They haven't changed. Always the same. Always the same three. But yeah, so yeah, every week they're given a certain amount of time and they're given a theme and sometimes they're given certain like objects to work with and materials, and then they cobble together a thing. And I mean, there is drama because they do have to work together.
Yeah, so they're working in teams, but they're each judged individually, which I think is kind of cool.
Yeah, I do like that. Yeah, I mean, it does sort of make like when they sort of have to be like, yeah, we sort of like the head better than the rest of it, and since you worked in the head, you win.
Yeah, that's the yeah.
Well, they also don't explain what they're winning. Like, there's no sort of sense of...
I think honor,
I mean,
esteem in the eyes of the judges.
I mean, there's the safety. They're not going to get voted off that week or judged off
yeah.
that week, but it's...
But that's true for the whole top team.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it would be better if they just had a top team.
Or at least if they explain to us what, you know... What you get for,
yeah.
you know, because I mean, some shows will like have like a set
right.
of prizes. I mean, that's what Strip Search did.
Yeah.
Strip Search essentially like, you know, gave, you know, either products or boosts and other like future games.
Right.
And so I'd like to see something more like that. Just so that I cared who won. Because right now it's just a race to the bottom.
Pretty much.
And Yeah, so we're probably gonna talk a lot more about it once it ends, so we can kind of give our post-mortem, because there's a lot to unpack. It does suffer from a lot of just reality show stuff.
Yeah, it would be a lot better if it were less reality show-ish.
But it's still very delightful, and it is one of the sort of, well, and Hannibal are one of the few sort of modern things.
That is our pop cultural. I'll watch Orphan Black when it comes on next Saturday.
Oh, I've heard so far decent things.
Well, I've watched first season.
No, but of the second season.
It hasn't started.
Well, whoever's reviewing it has been giving out good things. That's what I don't know. I don't follow it. I just, whatever IO9 tells me, I assume is moderately correct.
There you go. No, but I am looking forward to that.
Indeed. Am I watching anything?
I don't know.
We're watching Friday Night Lights.
We are watching. I want it to just be like Friday Night Lights with all the, you know how like TBS used to show Sex and the City in syndication with all the sex edited out?
Oh, did they? No.
Yes. Okay. I don't, I've probably watched like two episodes of that show in
ever. So it's just but they and used, the city?
Yeah, pretty much. I kind of want Friday Night Lights with all the football edited out.
I like Matt Saracen.
Do you?
I like him as, like, the sad, dopey, like, boyfriend.
I just want it to be, like, the Taylor family drama.
That is where the show really thrives. Although, I mean,
Tara's pretty great.
They've done a really good job, I feel, fleshing out all the various characters. I'm looking forward to the terrible second season, where it, like, jumps the shark.
Are we actually going to watch it?
And then, like, the
are
shark...
Are we going to watch the second season? Weren't we told to skip it?
We were told to, but when did we listen to the collab? That's about it. Still a lot of mad about you, but we don't need to get back into that.
We have, please, let's not go down that. Actually, we have not been watching any Mad About You.
That's true. We haven't been watching a whole lot.
That's because we had to host Small British Children.
Oh, that's right.
That's where our week went.
That's what made watching Hannibal really awkward.
Like, we were watching it before they came home one night. This 13-year-old British child is like, oh, what are you watching?
We're like, it's called Hannibal. So how was your day?
there's not a guy in a tree.
There's not a guy, like, melded into a tree.
Yeah.
Like you do.
Cool. Are we talking about something? I don't even know. I don't even know anymore.
Well, we
My
sort of...
My brain, I...
Well, we sort of, like,
bounced... I got Holy Week coming.
Well, we sort of been bouncing through various ideas before realizing, oh, wait, we've already done this. But your mention of Holy Week did make us realize that we do have a theme kind of present for us, which is looking
the
at...
The church here giveth. Like, our bounteous mother.
What does ordinary tithes give us besides a lot of green? Yeah, I thought so. There's so much green.
There's a lot of green.
So, we're in celebration or in recognition of Easter. We figured we would look at elements of death and resurrection in various pop cultural things that we like. Because it is a weird trope, and it's a weird tool that gets used from time to time.
Amanda agrees.
Amanda does agree. So I made a quick kind of jot down of some things, and I figure we can jump kind of right to it.
Cool. Go for it. Woot.
So
I'm really loopy.
You are very loopy.
I've reached. Oh, someone's sad.
Someone is sad about her Bambi toy.
No, she's sad about it. Won't let her have the bracelet thing that she threw up on the other day.
Oh,
and I don't want her sucking on it to clean it. Because she's baby and she likes horrible things. Here you go.
She does
That's
like
fun.
She does like terrible things. It's very true. So before we get into specifics, I do want to talk about how death and coming back from the dead really gets used and sort of overused.
Overused? Surely not.
Because there, you know, there's something to like, oh, you're going to kill off a character. That's really... You know, whether it's in a book or a movie or a TV show, it's like it's really dark and it's really, you know, kind of edgy. But we really, when characters die, unless it's Joss Whedon, we pretty much, like, can be convinced they're going to come back, right?
Even Joss Whedon.
Well, and even Joss Whedon.
Even Joss Whedon.
Even Joss Whedon. The biggest... You know, the biggest area where this is, I think, egregious is in the world of comic books, right? Like,
yes.
There's, you know, the huge joke about, oh, they killed off Captain America, ... again. and it's the fact that it's not just that they kill these people off, but that it's always made this huge deal. I mean, we're seeing this again because they're ending the Archie run with the death of Archie.
Oh, that's right. Well, I guess that's what happens when you have these, like, incredibly long-running stories about the same characters, and eventually you just... run out of story ideas and you need to do something big.
Yeah.
But then you still have these long-running franchises that you don't want to lose that character altogether.
Well, someone was talking about, one of my other podcasts I was listening to was talking about the problem with comic books is that they sit at this tension of, like, iconic storytelling and dramatic storytelling. Mm. And this idea of, like, you know, with dramatic storytelling, things need to change, a thing needs to happen, and it has to be dynamic. But with iconic, nothing can change.
Right.
These characters
right.
still need to be recognizable. Batman always needs to be Bruce Wayne.
Right.
So if you kill off Bruce Wayne, like they've tried to do,
yeah,
you know,
it doesn't work.
Even if you have Batman and sort of the rough idea of who Batman is, yeah, it's just it doesn't really scan. Same with Superman. I mean, the death and rebirth of Superman was such a weird ordeal. And it was huge.
Oh, we should link to that hilarious yes. thing with like Simon Pegg and Mandy Moore and
that thing
Elijah
was,
Wood.
Yeah, a guy went through and made this very irreverent and surprisingly celebrity filled short film about the kind of what the events and the death and the rebirth of Superman, showcasing just how ridiculous it was and not even hitting everything, like completely skipping out on like Pa Kent going to like heaven. And finding Superman there. I don't know. I can't even, like, finding weird, like, angels and demons in heaven. I can't even remember what was going on. But yeah, I mean, it's a joke, right? And so it can't really be taken seriously unless, I don't know. I feel like if Neil Gaiman were to kill someone off, it would work out pretty well. In fact, Neil Gaiman sort of killed off Batman, but in a very...
Was that the Killing Joke?
No. He didn't really kill him off. When Batman, quote-unquote, died in the last few years, spoiler, he didn't really die.
hence the topic of this podcast.
Neil Gaiman, I think even then he wasn't even resurrected. I think he just wasn't actually dead, but was, like, hiding. But Neil Gaiman did this book called Whatever Happened to the Caped Crusader, which is a reference to an Alan Moore story called Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow, which is actually about the death of Superman.
Mm.
And I'll get to that. But and Whatever Happened to the Caped Crusader, it's a series of kind of little vignettes all based around this kind of dreamlike funeral for Batman.
Weird.
And it's all these people telling stories and like, you know, the Joker coming forward and talking about Batman and Alfred telling this amazing, there's this great story called The Gentleman's Gentleman's Tale.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Which is all about Alfred and his relationship with Bruce Wayne. And again, it's non-canonical. Like, you know, it's not part of any real, you know, there's not, you know, you can't really point to it as being really within the world of Batman. But at the same time, it captures a lot of what is great about Batman. But Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow is really fascinating because Alan Moore wrote it to be a definitive canonical death of Superman.
Oh,
but he sort
okay.
of placed it a little bit out of time. So the idea being that no matter what happens to Superman and all
this,
of his ridiculous adventures,
this
is how it will end. And he purposefully like made it really sort of old-fashioned looking.
So it is kind of timeless?
Yeah, like it, you know, it's not. You know, I think he did it in the either 80s or 90s, but it's not cleaned up and doesn't have, you know, that really sharp kind of 90s style you know, illustrations. Like it almost looks like something from the 50s.
Yeah,
and it incorporates a lot of the old characters and a lot of the old character designs and like. You know, brings back Crypto, the super dog, but actually in really touching ways. and again, it tells a really good death of Superman, with the idea being, you know, Superman's still obviously alive and marketable, but for our purposes, he's you know, this is how he will die. This will be his swan song, and it's beautiful and it's poignant and it's a lot more meaningful than the kind of the oh.
Oh, poor pumpkin.
It's a lot more meaningful than the sort of the crass kind of sheer, you know, just marketing gimmick that was the death and rebirth of Superman with the, you know, 800 different editions and, you know, oh, you have to make sure you collect the different covers.
Yeah.
That was all taking place during the sort of the speculation crisis as well. I think it may have been sort of maybe after, but like I was around that time when it was all about trying to create collector's items. So that certainly helped it suffer. One book I want to talk about real quick before we move off of comic books, because I think aside from the Sandman books, you've really gone through a whole lot.
Runaways.
You did read Runaways, which was very good.
And I've read some of Fables.
Oh, that's right. You did start Fables. Well, we can talk about that a bit later.
That's about it.
There's a really hyper-violent and not great series called The Boys, which is really a kind of It's a commentary. It's a Garth Ennis doing kind of meta commentary on superheroes. But what he has is, you know, there's a world of superheroes, but they're all terrible and odious. And there's kind of a group of humans whose job is to kind of keep them in check. But they talk about, you know, what happens when a superhero dies. Oh, well, they can be brought back to life. But what's brought back to life is this sort of like zombie superhero that's kind of like posed for photos, but is never quite right. And like, if you know, and as their handlers, it's all about kind of, you know, superheroes are all corporate run. So like, it's PR handlers make sure they never quite give interviews.
Right.
But that was kind of his parody of the like, oh, well, you can always bring back a superhero. I want to say Suna Will Be Invincible, which is a wonderful book, did something similar. Again, playing with that idea. Because, again, it's so rife for parody because it just happens all the time. You know, you kill off a character and it comes back. But there, I think there are and that poisons it for any other media, right?
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, this is going to be super spoiler for pretty much everything. Anything on our like, disgust/spoiler list, I think you can assume we're going to, like, touch
probably
on
have
spoiling.
To spoil some things, yeah.
Because I think the biggest, like, a most obnoxious, egregious example of this in recent years was the second Star Trek movie. Right?
Yeah.
Because what it's referencing, for those who don't know, Kirk dies stupidly in the newest Star Trek movie, Into Darkness. And that death was just so out of nowhere. And a really ham-fisted reference to
well, it wasn't earned, right?
No, it wasn't.
It was entirely by, like, playing off of... The child understands. The child knows how it is.
True.
She wasn't even alive. She saw that movie in utero.
She did, didn't she? Did you hear the stupid Tribble being, like, injected with Khan blood for reasons that are important or something?
And then Kirk got resurrected.
But, like, resurrected right away, right?
Right away. You didn't feel, like, it wasn't like with Spock's death and they had to go, like, find him and...
You're going to make editing really fun today.
Yeah, there was no cost to it.
No. No, it was a kind of a cheap
throwaway. It was a cheap throwaway. Dramatic ploy.
That establishes some really problematic science.
Well, and the idea that we have this blood that essentially means eternal life, and we're just going to use it for Kirk and not actually explore the implications of that.
That are really dark.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I thought that was really, again, just ham-fisted. And again, as we said, you know, when it was first used in Wrath of Khan, it was very poignant, you know.
Well, you'd also spent, what, 15 years, like, seeing this friendship of Kirk and Spock being built up?
Yeah. No, and well, yeah,
I think it was IO9 pointed out that at this point, this Kirk and Spock had shared 4 hours of screen time, the vast majority of which they'd spent fighting.
Yes, yeah, no, it just as you said, it wasn't earned, and when it happened, you know, everyone in the audience was like, oh, I guess they're gonna bring him back to life somehow, and then it was dumb Tribble blood.
Yeah.
So just that, making the death not matter. And that's the main problem with so many of these sort of resurrection tropes, is that death doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And I mean, even in stuff that I really like, in the Game of Thrones books, there's no one who's really,
this is a huge spoiler for Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
I think it is where you see people brought back to... I mean, the people who are dead and brought back to life, there is seriously a cost. I mean, Catelyn Stark is back, but she's not quite Catelyn Stark.
Yeah.
Who's the
Beric Dondarrion?
Beric Dondarrion, who is, like... Is he really even human anymore? I mean, I think there's that theory of Jon Snow, who... for those of you... There's a theory that Brandon Stark is a warg, right? And in a sense, he is...
Inhabiting
his own body, like
his body became like a White Walker, not a White Walker, but became one of the sort of the risen dead, and now he is possessing it. So it's like this weird like zombie that's being possessed by his own consciousness.
Yeah.
And now this question of what's going to happen with Jon Snow.
So I mean, I think for all that George R. R. Martin definitely falls victim to the don't really assume they're dead until you see a body.
Yeah.
When there is actually a case of resurrection from the dead, it is always with a cost and with a price.
Well, and I mean, and he set that up perfectly. It was funny. I actually, when I first started mentioning Game of Thrones, I was just thinking about the kind of the metaphorical brought back from the dead. They sort of like, oh no, this character's dying. And then like seven chapters later, aha, I wasn't really dead all along. Yeah. But now that I think about it, he really sets up the rules for resurrection beautifully with Khal Drogo.
Oh, yeah.
And really sort of shows, okay, yeah, we have this character. We, you know, this really important character who matters, and we can bring him back from the dead. And it really matters to Dany, and it sort of it matters to the readers because he's the person who's going to keep Dany alive.
But it's a greater curse.
Well, yeah, and he's brought back, and it's like in the Boys. You know, he's this sort of barely functioning, you know, almost brain dead, you know, entity. Again, who's alive for all that matters. And I think so, yeah. So that's, I really like that. I really like how he plays with that. And that he does use it sparingly. You know, and the fact, and he uses it on characters you wouldn't necessarily expect, right?
Yeah.
You would expect, you know, headless Ned to come back, you know, to seek revenge. But it's his wife who, and which makes more sense, is much more kind of vengeful oriented. One series that did this, but did it sort of, I feel like they earned it. I don't know. We can discuss it. Is the Vorkosigan saga with the death of Miles and his resurrection.
Right.
Because.
But they did something good with that.
Oh, yeah.
Here's what. It's the ultimate coming of age story in a way.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's the death. So Miles goes through this. Near death experience, or he does die.
Yeah,
he does actually die,
and it's established. It's an established sort of piece of technology in the book that if someone essentially like all but dies, they can have their sort of their fluids drained out of them, put into a sort of a cryo sleep, or at least you know frozen, and then eventually put back together later.
Yeah,
and I don't know which book established that originally, but I think it's established enough early enough that when it happens to Miles, it is not just completely out of the blue.
No. But it essentially brings about the death of half of himself.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the death of his alter ego, Admiral Naismith.
Well, the death of his youth, you know, the death of his, you know, his, you know, quote unquote innocence. He doesn't really start innocent, but you know, he is a markedly different character. And it's funny to think of Lois McMaster Bijold kind of getting tired of telling the same stories over and over again and being like, how can I kill this off and start my new stories, which are kind of more like government mystery novels. But it worked really well. And they sort of, you have that scene where he quote unquote dies and then it cuts away from him for
basically an entire book.
Yeah. It doesn't really return to him until like the last few chapters.
Man, I need to read that again.
Oh, that's so good. That entire run from, is that Mirror Dance?
That's Mirror Game.
Mirror Game. Yeah. That run from Mirror Game to, Civil Campaign. Just, by itself is one of the best pieces of sci-fi.
We talk a lot about Miles Vorkosigan.
Well, because a lot happens to him.
It's true.
He's very scrappy.
Okay, so what about the two classic examples of this in geekdom?
Oh, okay.
Can you guess what I'm going with this?
Gandalf?
Yes, Gandalf and...
Aslan?
Oh, yeah. Well, let's get to Aslan at the end when we start talking more explicitly about Jesus. Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Oh, yeah. Well, I guess that's a kind of resurrection.
Sort of. Well, I mean, in the if you strike me down, I will be greater stronger and all more powerful.
You have heard the fun theory about that, right?
That everyone wants to die in front of Luke.
That the whole purpose is to become a blue ghosty person.
Yes. I know, Amanda. It's hard to be a baby.
And it's not a very good theory. I agree. Okay. Well, let's start with the Ben Kenobi bit, because that's interesting, because essentially, you know, it takes him from being a flesh and blood kind of, you know, counselor to someone who can kind of show up and deliver plot points as needed. The nice thing about it is also that they really didn't use that technique over and over again, right?
No.
Like, you know, you see it with Obi-Wan, right, and you see it with the three, you know, at the end of the movies.
Yes.
There was apparently, it's in the graphic novels, or at least it's hinted, and I think it's in the novels of Revenge of the Sith, but luckily it was not in the movie, but they actually had Blue Ghost Qui-Gon Jinn show up to to, like, weirdly, and, like, this was going to be, it showed up to Obi-Wan to, like, impart with him the knowledge of how to become a blue ghost person.
Oh, I remember that!
But luckily, that did not make it in.
No, yeah.
I mean, I guess it really couldn't have made the movie worse by that point.
Truth.
But yeah, I think there is this kind of...
I mean, I guess what's going on there is some idea of not being bounded by our corporeal existence and Yoda and Obi-Wan reaching beyond that very zen.
No,
not particularly Christian.
Well, no. I don't, are ghosts particularly Christian?
I totally got asked my professional opinion on that the other day.
Where does the church come down on ghosts, Rachel?
I think it sort of takes a not going to go there kind of
okay
kind of philosophy.
Fair enough. Patrick Swayze shows up.
At least it's Anglican. That's sort of like, I was like, isn't that the Anglican position on pretty much everything?
I suppose. If Patrick Swayze shows up, you're not going to instantly start trying to, like, you know, bust him, get out some exercising?
No, probably not.
Probably for the best.
We'd have to invite him to an adult dialogue.
That is.
We, you know, the power of Christ invites you to join in our ecumenical exchange share your perspective with the rest of us. We'd like to be part of your journey.
That really is not going to sell movie tickets. but with Gandalf is different, I feel. I mean, that's the sort of the really, you know, jumping back at you, whoa, kind of moment.
Well, because you get to feel
his absence.
The loss, right? I think that's one thing that in order to make a resurrection story count, you have to actually feel the loss of the person. The death has to matter.
Yeah. Oh, wait, well, and you have his death, and then you have Boromir's death
exactly.
Not too long afterwards.
Yeah.
And when he comes back, he's different. He's altered. There is that, like, there's something about that sense of being altered.
Just slightly other, you know? Like, he's not quite the same warm, cuddly Gandalf the Grey that we had.
Also, isn't he some weird sort of, like, space angel? I never read the Silmarillion.
I've never finished the Silmarillion. I get, like, I lose double points on that.
Oh.
As, like, a geek and a medievalist.
That's so true.
I lose such massive points.
It's just, there's so much of it.
There is. I start it, like, every 3 years or so. I'm like, this is going to be the time that I'm going to read the Silmarillion. And I get, like, 200 pages into it, and I'm just like,
It's like, I already have to read the Bible, right? Like, I don't see why I have to read Elf Bible, especially given my severe prejudice against elves.
Yeah, right.
So, yeah, so that's an example of coming back from the death in a really, you know, a very useful, very interesting way. Harry Potter.
Oh, do we have to?
I feel like it is.
Do we have to?
I feel like it is part of the blah, 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 zeitgeist, literature, blah, blah, blah.
Really?
So,
this is my glasses down on my nose look at you.
Well, I didn't write the book. But it's also dumb, right? Because it's sort of like, is it like it's really prophesied that he'll die, so he does. So it's very legalistic.
It is very legalistic.
And then he comes back. I don't even know.
I read, what is the last one called?
Deathly Hallows?
Deathly Hallows. I don't even know anymore. I read it when it came out, and then I haven't read it again.
Yeah, that was about it for me.
And I guess I saw the movie.
Oh, I didn't even do that. The movies.
Movies. Oh, why do they have to keep, like, trying to get more of my money by splitting up all of these things?
I think you just answered your own question.
That's okay. I had a baby, so I have a good excuse not to go to movies anymore. Take that, Peter Jackson, and your last two parts of The Hobbit.
I want to see Hobbits.
I know. It's sad.
You could have my money, Peter Jackson. I believe in you. I buy
Give
your
Give him
weird...
an extra $20 to babysit our baby while we go see it.
Dude. That is the problem. Yeah, so again, the Harry Potter stuff, it felt forced. It didn't feel earned. Even the deaths in that book were sort of like...
Well, all of the... Like, J.K. Rowling just applauded herself for killing people, but I felt like all of the deaths were very cheap.
It was like she was like really just like poking, like pointing at a character and then rolling a die to see if they survive, right?
Well, and then she killed off, she had to kill off a Weasley, and she killed the one with a twin, so she had a spare.
Yeah.
Sort of. And then
they all had mustaches. and kids.
Like, I don't know. It just, it was, it felt very meh.
Meh?
Yeah.
I could buy it. I'm not down. Well, something that popped into my head, and I'll get your thought on it, because it's very sudden, and it could be seen as very cheap, but I always find it very effective, is in The Dark Crystal.
Mm.
Kira.
Yeah.
Because she totes gets stabbed.
Yeah.
By Lord Chamberlain, and then, like, is sort of brought back, like, again, within, like, minutes. It's not particularly long. I mean, it's sort of, like, this big kind of dramatic thing. Now, would you consider that almost sort of a fridging, though? Do you feel like that's a kind of a death that's really just supposed to kind of, like, inspire Jen to action?
I feel almost every time a woman gets killed, it's a sort of fridging.
Is this the first female death we've discussed so far?
Possibly. Well, I mean, we could talk Fred in Angel.
Oh,
because that is a kind of death and resurrection.
I suppose.
Well, no, but I think it's an issue. Like, it's you know, at least of the actor.
Okay.
Oh, but it is. I mean, it is the a kind of, we want to kill this character. We have this actor that we think is capable of playing a different character and to give her a chance to do something that's very different than the character she'd been playing. So we kill her character and kind of rebirth a new being inside of her. But But in some ways, that it keeps that character present in the narrative. But she was totally killed to... She was the one... At that point, she was the one female in the group.
Yeah.
And she was totally killed to...
Cause Wesley pain.
And, well, not just Wesley, to cause Spike and Angel angst, to cause Gunn angst, so he could end up in weird suburban hell dimension.
Truth.
I mean, it was very... Tisk tisk, Joss Whedon.
Mm. Well, he'd already fallen into the bad trap of kill off your main character, not really, with Buffy. How many times?
Oh, twice.
I guess.
Well, I mean, I guess like the first time with Buffy, you get a pass, right? It kind of falls into that legalistic sense of there was a prophecy that she was going to die, so she died for 15 seconds and then
came back. Okay. But then there was the bigger one.
Well, then there was the bigger one, and I give that one a slight pass as well because they thought the show was going to get canceled at that point.
Oh, interesting.
Which would have been... It got picked up by a different network.
Oh, so that's when it transferred. Oh, I never knew that.
So it was actually kind of legitimate in that. But they kind of did something interesting in terms of a resurrection with that, because you have someone who felt like, you know, she had a purpose in life. Their purpose is her slayer. And especially in the fifth season, that purpose of protecting her family and protecting Dawn.
Yeah.
And... what I liked is the idea of death is your gift. Death is a gift, you know, that Buffy goes in search of the spirit of the first slayer to get, like, this spirit guidance stuff. And she's told that death is her gift. And then in the last episode, that's reinterpreted for her as love is your gift. And love and death are connected. And she realizes that it's her love of Dawn that makes her realize she has to sacrifice her life for Dawn. And that she, because there's this whole, like, portal to hell being opened and the demon opening it needs Dawn's blood to makes do sense. It. And then, well, there are for reasons. And Buffy realizes they have the same blood. So her blood can seal this portal as Dawn's, right? So so she throws herself off this tower to seal the portal to save Dawn. And it's very much the idea of, like, she's sacrificing herself to save this one person and save the world, but save this one person from having to make that sacrifice. And I mean, it's kind of, I think this is where we can actually get into some theological territory.
Okay.
Because I think there actually is something really interesting in that from the standpoint of the crucifixion and the atonement. And I mean, because the whole point is that Christ gives us that the ultimate example of self-giving love. And the cross.
Yeah.
To die for others. So it's this death and love and sacrifice all bound into one. What's interesting is, so Buffy feels like her mission is done. And the resurrection is, or her resurrection is not something that she is happy about.
Oh,
because she's in, you know, her friends think that she's in this horrible hell dimension. So they try to bring her back. And it turns out she had been in heaven. She was at peace. Her story was done, and then she was ripped out of that and brought back into our world. And from her perspective now, our world was hell. So I thought season 6 started out really, really strongly, and then, like, that, if you watch, like, the first up until about the musical episode.
Yeah.
Season 6 is really good, and then it just gets really bad.
And didn't you start with the musical episode?
That was the first episode of Buffy I ever saw.
So didn't you, like, text, so you technically started on the downward slope?
I started at the worst, I started in the worst stretch of Buffy I could have started.
Well done.
But it was a social thing.
No, I understand.
And it was also right when the DVDs were coming out,
We were being freed from the tyranny of weekly scheduling.
I think somehow by the musical episode to the beginning of the 7th season, I managed to actually catch up on all of Buffy.
You do watch television very fast when you want to.
It's true. Well, I guess we can touch a little bit on Cordelia and Angel from that.
Oh, I guess so.
Perspective. I mean, she is someone who kind of finishes her, like, I kind of like how they managed to sum up her story.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and they sort of did something similar, kind of bringing something back in her body, letting the actress do something a little different. But again, I guess I never really felt like she was sort of gone, except for just being sort of pregnant and gone. Yeah.
So, Aslan.
Aslan. It's pretty big. Like, I think it's, you know, when it comes to in all of kind of pop culture, I mean, you know, they sort of try to make Superman into Jesus from time to time.
Yes.
But it's hard to beat Aslan.
It is.
I mean, he's very self-conscious as well, right? I mean, Lewis is telling.
Well, I mean, it's the story. I mean, that's what makes the Chronicles of Narnia so fascinating, is that they are the story of the incarnation if it had happened in another world.
Yeah.
That's what I like about the space trilogy as well, is you kind of get the image of, in Paralandra, a world that has not yet fallen.
Oh, okay.
And is facing the temptation. And is still at the crux of that moment where it could fall or could not.
I've not read the space trilogy, so I can't sort of speak to it. But does it have that same sort of emphasis on, you know, death is necessary for salvation, that you have to have that kind of...
Well, it's not. It doesn't get up to the death. At least that point of the space trilogy is looking at just the creation story and the fall. I block out the third book.
Oh, yes?
Because it gets soups misogynistic.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So it's when me and C.S. Lewis have little words.
Have to part ways.
It's kind of like when I was reading The Four Loves and had to, like, throw it across the room and then shove it in a drawer and not finish reading it for 6 months.
I think that makes sense.
We got, I love C.S. Lewis, but every once in a while we need to just take a little break.
Chillax.
Have some moments. And then I go read Dorothy Sayers and it makes me much happier.
Well, while he's not being odious to, like, I guess, Oxford professorial wives.
Yeah. specifically in The Four Loves, when he says that, like, friendship isn't possible between women.
That is problematic.
Yeah. Because women just talk about, like, narrative stuff with their families, and they gossip about what's going on. But men talk about ideals and philosophy.
Yeah, I hang out on dark corners of the internet where this theory is still espoused.
Yeah.
It's pretty awful.
Anyway, moving on.
With the first book in the Chronicles of Narnia, even before a lot of the insidious sort of racism stuff kind of begins creeping in.
Oh, yeah, there's that.
You do have this wonderful, really powerful story. I mean, I'm thinking sort of the variations that I've seen it with in the story, in the animated series, or the animated version of... Lion, the Witch, and Wardrobe, the BBC version, and then later on the Liam Neeson strain.
Man, I wish Brian Cox had been the voice of Aslan.
Oh, that would have been so good.
I mean, Liam Neeson is awesome, but he's just so Liam Neeson.
Well, you hear Liam Neeson and you see Qui-Gon Jinn, right?
Exactly, exactly.
Whereas you sort of, if you heard, like, you know, Brian Cox's rumble, I don't think you would necessarily, awesome, like, you know, be able to pin it down. But no, I mean, it's a wonderful, that's wonderful because, you know, it has this interesting story of salvation, but it's so personal.
Yeah.
Right? Like it is.
But it's not like Aslan is dying for the sins of all of Narnia. It's this one guy.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool.
And the resurrection there is just chock full of such wonderful images. You know, you've got this sort of the two girls kind of waiting for morning to come.
The little mice coming to gnaw off the,
Just to gnaw the ropes away. It's really just...
Well, I think the death scene, right? You get the mockery and the debasement of Aslan with all of these ghouls and ghosts and goblins coming and, you know, shaving him and torturing him and just utterly, utterly, utterly debasing him. So it's not just his death, but they make a mockery of him.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like with Jesus.
Precisely. As we've been talking, you know, I think as we've been talking, we've come to the conclusion that when you want to do a good resurrection story, your character needs to come back somehow fundamentally altered.
Yeah.
But in Aslan's case, and ultimately in Jesus's case, that's not necessarily true.
Hmm.
Right? Like, what comes back is still the same person, right? It's not a...
Jesus, I mean, Christ is marked with the scars of the crucifixion.
But it's still... Yeah, but he is still, like... He is not different. Aslan is not
different. Here's the parallel of Jesus and Aslan, is I would say that they are not different, but they are... They resurrect with a sense of purpose and triumph.
Well, their death matters.
Yeah.
Right? And the fact they are back matters.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting to see how they're able to redeem the badness of the trope, right? Because, in the worst cases we've seen
One could argue that the Christian resurrection story is not redeeming the badness of the trope, but is ultimately the origin of the trope from which all other of these stories comes. That would be C.S. Lewis's point.
Oh, that's very true.
C.S. Lewis's point would be that the Christian myth is the one true myth from which all other...
Well, and that's the big counter to sort of these stories emerge. About, folks talking about other kind of dead and dying god mythologies, right?
Yeah. Well, I think this is where you get into interesting stories like in... I mean, Norse mythology is a fascinating example because we have no pure access to Norse mythology before Christian influence.
Yes.
So you have something like Odin, who is the hanged god. The sacrifice of himself to himself. I mean, it's really hard to divorce that from Christian imagery.
I agree. Unless you're Neil Gaiman.
Where are we going with this?
Oh, I was just I was talking about the
that it's not redeeming the trope, but it is the source of the trope in a way, the one true resurrection story.
Very true, and I think there's a lot more too that can be unpacked as you sort of go through. But as we get close to Easter,
well, I guess the whole point of the resurrection of Christ is, I mean, this gets into real theological territory and different theories of the atonement. And I mean, the whole point of Jesus's resurrection is that it was not about him or changing something in him, but about changing something in us and changing something in the world, right? So he shouldn't come back from the resurrection changed.
I agree.
It's what's changed. I mean, and this is the whole point of the post-resurrection. I got to write a sermon for Easter once, so I'm working on this. This is the whole point of the post-resurrection accounts in the Gospels. That they are about the disciples finally getting it. The disciples who failed to understand what Jesus was about up until that point finally get it. Their eyes are opened to the Messiah. In my New Testament class, it was Easter is the crisis moment.
Oh, okay.
Right? Easter is that moment that changes everything, which is kind of cool.
I think a good place for us to... sit down until we are back. We'll see what Easter does. We have a lot of family coming up because
Amanda's doing her baptism.
Yeah, we have both Easter and then baptism. So hopefully we will be back in 2 weeks.
Are you finally not going to be a little heathen baby?
Oh. Although they got rid of limbo, so you're okay.
They did get rid of limbo.
Or is there still Anglican limbo?
Do we Anglicans?
Go ahead.
We don't have positions on things.
Oh, poor Amanda. Not getting to go to baby limbo.
We don't want her to go to baby limbo.
But she can hang out with Virgil.
But no, baby limbo. We want her to be happy and healthy and not going to baby limbo.
I suppose that's true.
If you want to get real fun, let's ask if Anglicans believe in purgatory. That's where the real fun is.
I can only imagine.
Then we can ask about Anglican theories of the atonement. That could be a whole different podcast. Woo!
I'm going to keep away from all that.
I've also got to write a Good Friday sermon. This is all I'm up to.
Too true. So anyway, we will try to have this show back in action for you. In the meantime, I think we're going to have Debs and Errol take us out singing their song about a show that was chock full of resurrection. In fact, had resurrection ships. And that would be their BSG song.
BSG!
From the world of faith, family, and fandom in no particular order. And now she's going to try to eat the microphone.
Okay, let's not do that. Bye-bye.
Geek out, y'all.
I thought I found a kindred spirit in you. Into all 33 all things I was into. We formed a duo, bought the t-shirts, I shared my water with you. It was a dream for me, but sometimes dreams fall through. Bastille Day and we were chatting on Google like we always do. I said something about the Final Five arrow, you got so confused. I said, where are you? You said the start of season two. What do you mean? How could you not have finished BST? I said, frack, frack, fracking, frack. You said, what's that? What's that? I can't believe that you didn't finish BST. I said, why? You said, I just got busy. As an act of contrition, watch them all now or you can't go home again. It's a litmus test, and if you don't pass, then it's 6 degrees of separation. You could tie me up or tie me down, you could burn me flesh and bone. I will bring down the hand of God, yeah, the gauntlet has been thrown. Oh, 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 how can it be? How could you not have finished BST? I said frack, frack, fracking, frack. You said, what's that? What's that? I can't believe that you didn't finish BST. I said, why? You said, I just got busy. How about Colonial Deo? Tell me, does that sound familiar? Last gleam of cobalt, oh, you've seen that one. You must remember. How can you bear the thought of not knowing what happens after? I tell you who the Cylons are, but you'd insist, no spoilers. Just come clean. Just go ahead and finish BST. Ooh, frack, frack, fracking, frack. You said, what's that? What's that? I just can't believe you didn't finish BST. I said, why? You said, I just got busy. Just got busy. Just got busy.